Hi, this is Dark Journalist. Today we have a special guest making a rare appearance on the show. Best-selling author, lecturer, and the founder of the Rantha School of Enlightenment, Jay-Z Knight, is with us. Now, Jay-Z has written many books outlining her fascinating journey, but it was her breakthrough book, A State of Mind, that in 1987 catapulted her to prominence, and her profound teaching is reaching a growing audience of new followers even today, with her recent appearance in the popular film What the Bleep Do We Know. Now, Jay-Z's Rantha School of Enlightenment has been a powerful source of inspiration for thousands of followers worldwide. Her dynamic focus on self-actualization through quantum consciousness has spawned a myriad of imitators. And when you channel 35,000-year-old wisdom, you're not going to avoid some controversy. Let's step outside the box. Here we go. Jay-Z Knight. Quantum consciousness, UFOs, Rantha, and creating the future.
The future allows adaptation and expansion. The past doesn't allow it.
You know, I'm only the vehicle. I've been out of my body in 40 years more than I've been in my body. And he said, you know, what I'm teaching you today is that the CIA is using these techniques on their remote viewers and have been for a long time. And he said, you have no idea how long I've been waiting to meet you, because when I was brought into the remote viewing program, I was given this desk, and this my handler opened up this drawer, and there was all this Rantha stuff. And he said, watch everything of this, because this is what you're going to learn to do.
You know, when we look at the most pressing issues of our time, it seems we're surrounded by scenarios that are simply too big to solve. From the harmful impact on the environment, the double dealings on Wall Street, the national security surveillance state, and the rumblings of war in the Middle East again, a sane person might ask, where are we headed now? Thankfully, the human race has shown an amazing ability to turn within to find answers, and a strong appreciation for the mysteries of the unknown. Today's guest is a real ambassador of that mystery. By blending her work with science and spirituality, and working on an individual basis, her approach may be more relevant than ever. So let's go talk to Jay-Z Knight. Jay-Z, it's a great honor to have you here on the show today.
I'm Jay-Z Daniel. I am happy to meet you, and thank you for your work. Thank you for bringing information to people, that we finally have a medium in which people don't have to be afraid to listen to, don't have to be afraid to have experiences to share.
Yes.
I'm from the era that all of that was squashed. You know, anything outside of anything was a cult.
All right.
Or if you saw a UFO, you were a nutbag. So, I really celebrate. I'm really happy I lived long enough to see this, Daniel.
Well, I can appreciate that. And I want to say here that your work and ideas have really paved the way for so much that we take for granted now, especially around these alternative research questions. You've really been way ahead of your time.
Oh, golly. Where do we begin, Daniel? I mean, you know, do we go outside of the margins? Should we do a tin show series? We could start way back, yes.
Now, what I've always found very intriguing was the personal side of your story. You know, getting pulled out of these kind of ordinary circumstances where you were relatively happy and into doing the great work of the Rantha School of Enlightenment. You know, I can only imagine the kind of personal transformation that was taking place there, and also the challenge that followed in becoming a kind of controversial figure.
You're absolutely right. You probably weren't even born when Rantha appeared to me in 77.
Huh.
But it was a remarkable destiny. And he coined the term channeling because I was a dentist's wife, homeroom mother. The one concept that I was unmovable from was that I could pray to God, not the religious God, but I could pray to God. And I had such acceptance of the future. and that I always wanted to help people because God helped me.
Uh-huh.
And then I have this extraordinary being appear in 1977 in my book. But Ramtha was an icon in the early 80s, an icon during the New Age, Old Age movement. But most of those people, you know, they were channeling or they were trancing porpoises or, you know, some doctor that had died in the Ming Dynasty and, and you know, and purple and crystals and, you know, love and peace and all that. And Ramtha's message just wasn't in that box. He, you know, he came out to the said, and this was after 2 years of being taught how to leave my body. Actually, in a long saga of visiting not only near-death experiences, which, you know, I talk about this going back to 1977. This isn't a new thing. Not only seeing what is in a dimension, which is a frequency specific that is a different frequency than the matter that we have.
Right.
Seeing that, but on another level, meeting beings that can transcend the dimensions and back again. In other words, Ramtha always said, mind is matter, Daniel.
Huh. Well, that's a very interesting phrase, and it almost goes beyond the mind over matter concept in a sense. Now, one of the things I've always found fascinating is that when you were opening up to this Ramtha experience, you actually expanded your awareness about other beings also.
And the beings that I started to meet, Daniel, were beings from systems, you know, the Crab Nebulae, all of these beings. I was slowly integrated into meeting and understanding that, you know, if you are an alien, you must look like us. If you don't, then you follow the criteria of evil. So my initiation over 40 years has been not only understanding the spirit, which really is our divine quality, but that is everywhere in beings everywhere, and how that body, that suit, that alien suit that they wear, which is our physical body, is really made up of whatever system, whatever planet. It's made from the clay of those planets, those systems. They breathe differently. Some don't even eat. You know, they ingest an atmosphere. But if we take the body away from the Nordics, we take it away from the Blue Avians, we take it away from all of that, we have this ball of light, Daniel. And this ball of light is what's wearing that body.
Uh-huh.
I learned that over 40 years, had lots of experiences. I had so many UFO experiences, many I documented in my book. And so when you come and take sort of a really big mind, you know, when we get out of this little box and we start looking over here, we start looking over here, and you take this really big mind and you bring it back to your neighbors.
All right.
You know, or, you know, everything threatens religion, right? So then.
So you're a heretic right off the bat.
And then, you know, they're meeting with the government and, you know, it was on the front cover of the New York Times 5 different times. And so the intent was to bring it down and destroy it because the message of behold God in everyone, that God was actually in us, that our spirit was a ball of light. It was wearing this body and brain is computer. So emotions are to experience what we've made known. You know, an emotional experience is a new experience. And our bodies experience the tactile expression of what we've created. And so that threatened religion, the religion threatened politics, the politics got into the media and, you know, and they went after us. And so anybody, you know, who thought they were a channel, which is a very, very rare phenomenon, Good is such a being. Many of the abductees, many of the people working on secret projects, even you, have had an experience to where you get other information to you. That's a very rare phenomenon. Everybody's psychic. Not everybody knows, but everybody is psychic.
Well, that's very interesting and an excellent point, actually. But when you were, you know, facing this adversity, going through this experience, and you were being challenged really for embracing this larger version of reality, were you ready for that? And really, how did you live through it all?
At every step of the way, Daniel, I was hit with the government, the media, religion. I think I'm the original cult leader, even though I'm a corporation. There was nothing ever good said. And so people who live in little boxes, who live that, you know, the news is the truth. They're Christians, even though they sin every day and judge other people. That aliens are for nut jobs.
Right.
Those kinds of people turned on me viciously. And that's the way that you do disinformation.
Yeah.
And yes, I've lived through it all.
That's pretty amazing.
I've talked to you today.
Exactly. Well, you have survived through the adversity and you've really thrived, which is impressive. One thing that caught my attention, you know, you mentioned secret projects there.
Yes.
And at one point, some information surfaced that some of these deep black projects did study the Ramtha material. There's that book called Psychic Warrior, where they mention these programs.
I'm so happy you brought that up.
Definitely. It's very unusual.
No. see, one of the, just a bit of backstory, not to get into the weeds, but, you know, Ramtha never was in my body. He uses the body as a body. He uses the back of the brain. So it's sort of a puppet. I'm gone. So this is sort of a, this goes with his teaching that you are not your body. He would send runners, and he would manifest healing. He would manifest, I mean, that's why he was so outrageous, you know, in the 80s. And everyone who was anyone wanted to know him. But, you know, he was unknowable in the sense that each experience that he delivered to his students was he would say to them, you know, what I'm doing here, you can do.
Well, it's such a different approach, really. And, you know, I can imagine a student coming in and being conditioned by traditional methods, you know, like psychology, which is a very limited model where all of your emotions can be tied back to some childhood experience.
Yes, because I didn't like my mother. So am I Aunt Bessie, you know, some sort of really linear, fundamental, wacky stuff. And he would say, no, your job is to make known the unknown. That's why you're here. So Ramtha, in terms of teaching, when he finally set up the school here in 1988, and when we were everywhere, we had every royalty, every politician. We could go deep. Finally, he started the school where he wanted to teach people how to access their mind, how to manifest reality and begin to understand the reality in which they create. And so he was working on a remote viewing sending. And this is back in 88. But Ramtha was doing that to people as far back as 1977 when he appeared.
Okay.
And so the students, we would have Chinese student working with an Italian. And Ramtha would train you how to know and how to discern knowingness from your personality. So what he did is he was getting such enormous blow away results with these people. These people were like coming alive. It's like, I always knew I could do it. I didn't know how. So this one day he makes a statement, Daniel, in the arena. And he said, you know, what I'm teaching you today is that the CIA is using these techniques on their remote viewers and have been for a long time.
Oh.
So he just makes that off the cuff. And then he continues and everybody goes, oh, that's great. And so then our man comes to say, and he said, oh, my hack, You have no idea how long I've been waiting to meet you, because when I was brought into the remote viewing program, I was given this desk, and this my handler opened up this drawer, and there was all this Raptor stuff. And he said, watch everything of this, because this is what you're going to learn to do.
Uh-huh.
So he confirmed that of something that Raptor had said back in the late 80s. He confirmed in the 90s. So, yes, we've been doing that. Now, what is the aim, Daniel? The aim is to make us viable for the future.
I see.
To find who we really are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really fascinating.
And so, yes. If you live long enough, you get to be validated.
Oh, you're doing great now. You know, I recall that a little while ago when the What the Bleep Do We Know movie came out, and it reintroduced all of these people to your work again. And it was a really interesting format, too, a kind of transformational media, you know, a movie with a lecture tour. So again, your ideas were being presented in this kind of cutting-edge way. And you were talking about quantum physics in there. So again, you're bringing forward this kind of futuristic vision.
It's, you know, I'm only the vehicle. I've been out of my body in 40 years, more than I've been in my body. And I mean, I'll be 70 years old in March.
That's great.
There is sort of this, you don't age when you're out of your body. The work.
That's one of my questions, actually, which is, why aren't you aging? How are you reversing the aging process?
I always wanted to be older, Daniel, because I was young and stupid and silly. And I always loved the story of King Solomon, that the greatest gift that he wanted from God was wisdom, that he could be wise and take care of his people. I thought that was the wisest gift, you know, and beyond riches or anything like that. And so Raptor would always say, well, when you're older and wiser, meaning that you've gone through all of these circumstances, experiences, that you come back and then you qualify yourself how well you did, you know, and you could do better. We can't build better unless we've done. And so once we do, then we have experience, then we can build wisdom from it. And those become the building blocks of the future. So all I wanted was to be wiser. And so I would tell people, I mean, this goes back to, you know, the late 70s and early 80s. You know, I can't wait till I'm older, because I felt like that if I could live a future where I could live unbeknownst to all the adversity coming my way, if I could go through not only the human trial of adversity to test my sincerity, but that each adversity, which is not a bad thing, I mean, it's an initiation, do I qualify to know bigger and greater things in the future? If I back off from adversity, I don't get the future. So, you know, when I was 40, I couldn't wait to be 50, Daniel. When I was 50, I couldn't wait to be 60. All the time I was 60, I couldn't wait to hit 70, because I knew I was getting wiser every year. So how did I, you know, maintain my age? One, I was out of my body and in a timeless place. One of the reasons that I really adore Good, who I just discovered, the young man who was abducted in the middle of the night, spent 20 years off and came back, you know, in the middle of the night, and he had gone through all this training.
Yes, in a covert project.
I never found anybody that could explain so clearly what I do when I'm not in my body, when Ramp is using it. And so essentially my body stopped aging. And it's these time periods of channeling. And so people can say, oh, well, you had cosmetic work. I don't think so. Nobody my age has freckles and scars and wrinkles and, you know, all those sorts of things. I do, and I love to be older. I don't,
sure.
When I wanted to be 30 years younger, I was endeavoring to heal a pathology that I had started, a disease that I started with an attitude. when I was in my late 40s that started to manifest in my 60s. And so when I went back and wanted to restart and reboot my DNA, remember, mind and DNA are the same thing. Consciousness and energy are the same thing.
I think that's a key understanding. And what's so fascinating about tying it together with something like aging is we can see that relationship again between our thoughts and our physical bodies.
I mean, I'm not afraid to be my age. Ask anyone that knows me personally.
It's a great age.
But I wanted to reboot an illness, a pathology, Daniel, that I had started with an attitude. And so when I became 30 years younger, this I call it moving to a new neighborhood in my brain. I mean, when I got the MRI back and the progress, I just said, well, the first thing, Daniel, was, well, I need to move to a different part of my brain where I've never been sick.
Ah, I see.
Now, you don't hear anybody say that, but I have such loose boundaries with my body that I knew I had to go somewhere where I didn't have a personality that was connect emotionally. And with all my wisdom, I could actually build the architecture to go there and live. I could actually frame a new neural net based upon three principles. I have always been 30 years younger. I am filled with the love of God, and I've always been a genius. And so love doesn't need to be mentioned, because if it's there, it just goes with you. I mean, that's a fabric of what we are. And so when I moved to a new neighborhood, overnight, I was disease free. Overnight, we've had plenty of documentations on that. I started getting younger. And I didn't get younger because I wanted to look younger. I got younger because I wanted to reset my DNA for 30 years ago on the onset of an attitude that really led to that present pathology I had. And that's what I did.
Well, it sounds like quite a fascinating process.
Do you think about, Daniel, moving to a new neighborhood in your brain?
Well, it's so intriguing. I'd like to learn how to do it.
Come to school. I'll teach you.
Oh, that's a great idea.
I'll teach you. It's an easy thing to learn. It's just convincing yourself you're ready to move. And guess what? You absolutely get all of the hookups and new streams and rises of consciousness, because you have new neurons firing. And when you have new neurons firing, you get future streams of consciousness, because you say you're a genius. And the geniuses work with ideas known and unknown. And when you say you're a genius, you tap into the future. So you have to be open to that. Anyway, enough of me gabbing.
No, are you kidding? This is absolutely fascinating. Now, you mentioned this process of changing your DNA, and I keep thinking about these studies that were done on you at a certain point. And I always imagined, you know, you throwing up your hands and saying, all right, bring in these scientists if they don't believe it.
I don't care. I've always said that.
Yeah. And so they did all of these tests on you. And it's a matter of record now. Many physiological changes happen to you when you're channeling Ramtha. So can you go into that a little bit here? What is it that's taking place?
Have you ever seen the difference between me and Ramtha now that you see me? Do you notice the difference between us?
I think I do.
Oh, what is it that you notice, Daniel?
Well, for me, there is certainly a different presence there. And I always see that your eyes change.
They do. The eyes change, the neck gets thick, the body puts on about 15 to 20 pounds of water. That's usually why it looks very large. Ramtha is over 7 feet tall. I mean, that's his manifestation. He's a Lemurian. He's a giant. And so the body, I used to wear a size 8 shoe. I wear a 9, 9.5 now. Everything got bigger in my body. So, you know, there were physiological obvious changes that happened like that. I'm not in my body. I'm in a near-death experience. It's the best way I know how to explain things. I
That's pretty remarkable.
Gone through the tunnel. Ramtha, you know, he picks up, when I leave, he picks up my body at about 36 beats as the heart's shutting down.
Uh-huh.
And he picks it up and it zooms from 36 to, you know, 163 beats a minute and on as far up as 189 beats a minute.
Whoa.
That was tested by a parapsychologist in 1996 who tested that three different times. So so he takes the body, he provides his own electromagnetic field, if you wish, which the RAM teaches is not your aura, it's your bands. It's the light bands. So he surrounds the body and supports it and keeps it alive. But, you know, Daniel, he can drink seven bottles of wine. I don't drink. He can drink seven bottles of wine and never go potty.
Oh.
I'd still be lucid. And he does that to show you it's not me. There's something great, which actually represents that you don't worship him. You begin to understand what is latent in you, what you can do.
When you've experienced Ramtha, what's the longest that you've been out of your body and that he's occupied it?
I don't experience Ramtha. I just die. I just go. And I'm one of those balls of light.
Uh-huh.
My experience is much like Goot's experience. Whenever I unfold, wherever I'm at, it's always different. There's a lot of things I can't tell you. Not yet. About who I am. I unfold into places that seem very natural to me. I feel like I was on a mission. Maybe that's the best way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spent a long amount of time there. When I return to my body, it's done reluctantly. It's as if, I mean, I go through a sort of a decompression where I'm coming from this other space of frequency and I have to slow down the frequency in order to become my ball of light in my brain that then connects with everything in my body. And now that, I can't remember once that I ever wanted to come back, Daniel. I never, in 40 years, I don't remember one time I ever wanted to come back. I mean, it's like having a big jackboot in the middle of my back and I'm being pushed through a screen door.
Yeah.
And through the screen to come back. And so this is, so when, once I'm there, I'm disoriented. I can't feel my feet. I'm very swollen. I don't know where I'm at. I channel so much that when I left my body, like at 5 o'clock in the morning, I would look out, it's dark. I would come back. I always look out the window to determine time because I don't know what time it is. And I would come back 12 hours later and it's dark. The only thing I know that happened to me is there's mud on my boots.
Wow.
You know, but I don't know in that lost period here what happened. So 18 hours Ramtha uses the body. I usually can't function for about 2 days. I'm losing water. I'm disoriented. I usually try, if I can, to stay in bed because I still have swollen legs, swollen feet, swollen everything. And until all of that water goes away, I really can't function very well. And I don't speak very well. So every time I channel, there's like a 2 day recovery period. And then I start to, you know, get back. Now, before, when Ramtha was only using the body like 2 hours, it was still difficult, but then I would get enough rest that I could leave again. If I can't move out of my body, because let's say I have a, you know, bummed up knee, and so my focus is on my knee. If my focus is on my knee, it's not up here.
Uh-huh.
And so if I have low energy, I'm exhausted, I'm tired, Daniel, I don't have enough to exit to my body. And there is an exit. I mean, energy moves up my body that stimulates from my cell, you know, like through the central nervous system. It has to come up. It comes up like a fire up the spine, back up the spine. Nerves are highways and byways and country roads where mind is working. And so when you leave, all of that has to come with you. And then it comes up to my head and I just pop out. I hear a ringing and I pop out. And the next thing you know, I'm on the top of the ceiling or I'm somewhere. After 40 years being by coming back to garbage cans or leaving beside them or in elevators or hotel rooms or, you know, wherever I'm at. And then I'm gone. But if I'm exhausted, I don't have the focused will to pull all that is me, my ball of light. I don't have enough energy to even, because a brain's computer, and the computer isn't working, how do you send an email?
Right.
You know, and brain is computer. And so if your computer is on the bum, you're not able to work it. That's what happens with an exhausted brain. So that's the reason why people don't function properly when they have lack of sleep, when they have pathologies in their body, because their brain that is directing the neurological electrical field in the body is really consumed with healing or repair or managing pain, for example. If that's all going on, chances of me exiting are very slim.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a really but I wouldn't miss it for the world, Daniel.
Right. Well, you know, it's eye-opening to hear you speak about this, because you obviously have to keep close attention to your own health to be able to manifest Ramtha and have that presence come through. Now, when you're in that state and Ramtha is coming through you, can you dream where you are?
That's how I am where I am.
I see.
For example, do you feel I'm present with you right now?
Yes.
Right. Through technology, right?
Yes.
We're having this lovely conversation. Are you in my office with me? Am I in that room with you?
Well, that's interesting. You're not physically here, but in a sense, you are here.
When you're a spiritual being, you can be anywhere, and anywhere seems like now, but physically I can't hug you and say thank you so much for being here, but that's the way it is with your body. I mean, just what we're doing right now, we can spiritually can connect, because right now you are seeing me, but you don't know I'm real.
True.
Do you?
I have to draw on a concept of you being real there, but you're right. I don't actually know that you're real.
Same way with what I do. So I don't dream. I'm just somewhere. Uh-huh. And I like to call it elsewhere, because there are elements to what I do that I can't talk about. And I haven't been able to for 40 years. A lot of information I've been able to speak about, and some things I've been able to develop the technology of places I've been. A little heaven on earth sort of thing.
I see. Now, anyone who's read your books and seen you channel Ramtha at these extraordinary events is going to know about what Ramtha is teaching. But I'd like to ask you here what he teaches.
Ramtha has taught about aliens and UFOs, seven levels of consciousness and energy, our journey, what we are, the bigger picture of what we are, this about being what he used to call a plane of demonstration is actually a prison planet, and that sort of we are doomed to repeat the emotions we abide with, because that says you're not getting it. So we have to keep giving the experience to you until you're wise, you see?
That is interesting. And I should point out here that so many people have borrowed this term, prison planets. And I think it's intriguing he looks at it that way. And it does occur to me that it's sort of intentionally designed that way.
It is. Ramtha is always called the Earth. When he says, you know, some of the gods left. 35,000 years ago, it was Project Genesis. You know, I mean, those are the words in our lexicon that we can sort of understand the idea of why would these different races from different systems be here, because they are, you know, they're regenerating, let's just say, the jungle. And they are recreating and genetically adapting things to live in a new earth. You know, the earth used to have a higher content of nitric oxide than oxygen. Things grew really big. The cloud cover of the earth sort of gave us sort of a black light effect. Everything got giant. Not all of the earth was covered in water. The adaptation of these, let's just call them scientists, these away teams that have been looking after their experiments, their change have always been with us. Since their departure from being worshipped as gods, from being worshipped in a religion, you know, sort of, you know, enslaved the people to do that. Since they left, you know, we've been on a decline.
Uh-huh.
You know, we used to have fantastic technology. You know,
right. It was just
incredible. We didn't have to use fossil fuels or even, you know, the tiger's tail of uranium. We didn't have to use any of those things. We've been on a decline. And a failure, one part of our human experience is that we are, it's easier to let someone else do it to us and tell us their truth that we accept as ours because we're too inconvenient to try it, to listen to it. So you have been, you know, the kings and queens, the pharaohs, the rulers, the feudal system, the church, you know, all of this proclaimed hypocrisy that sort of people give their power away to. Well, you make the decision for me. If you tell me I need to go off to war so I can save my family, show me where to go.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And there is that dangerous tendency when dealing with authority to just lose one's sovereignty. And it seems particularly hazardous to do that now. But as you said, it's been going on for a long time.
Our history shows that without true inspiration and the truth about who we are, we have given our power away to be ruled for at least 10,000 years. And in that ideology of every reincarnation. A reincarnation is just, you wore out the spacesuit, all right. So we got to reboot, where were you? All right, this goes into your soul. So we got to find the DNA that matches that, and you're going to come back in, you get another chance at life. I mean, you know, it's sort of that kind of a program. So what we have is a depreciation of how wisdom is gained. So we've given our power away to all of these important people today at celebrity corporations, who's who,
yeah.
What's acceptable, what isn't acceptable. Instead of working on our individuality, what is our journey? Not to be a part of the group, what is our individual journey? It means a future. Many people let other people make decisions for them. Rantha has always said, you know, the greatest thing you do is always made by your choice. Then he's taught us how to begin to see ourselves as a destiny of making known the unknown. Once we outknow the prison planet, we don't come back here.
Uh-huh.
The body can die, but, you know, the spirit is immortal. And it goes to its place to pick up another project and go elsewhere if it wishes to. It's very powerful. These things that we've become so afraid to get harmed or ridiculed at, or, I mean, for God's sakes, you know, we're not even supposed to eat anymore, you know, so that we can look good. We're not even supposed to, you know, grow old like I'm growing old. You don't want to do that because you won't be in the in group. But, you know, what happens to that group? I mean, who's the leader? What do they do every day? And what's behind the scenes? Those kind of people are doomed
right.
to come back here. No matter what, we blow up the planet, we poison the atmosphere. Yeah, that's because your frequency belongs to a place of failure, of thriving. You see?
Yes. So they're actually locking themselves in here.
Everyone does.
Right.
Until you realize, I mean, that you're a beautiful and wonderful being, that you could do marvelous things. Rampa's 1986, 87, 88 teaching of remote viewing, sending and receiving, biolocation, and then in the 90s, the great blue body on how to heal yourself and what are the seven bodies of consciousness and energy. All of that progress all along the way was never just, you know, what was it? Plato said, you know, humanity is doomed until you put philosophical kings on the throne. Well, but philosophy does no one any good. What it has to do is that we have to choose to be it and to do it and to experience it. Rampa's teaching was, he'll always say to you, nothing he says to you is the truth.
Uh-huh.
It only becomes relative when I say, this is how you do this, and you do it, then it's the truth.
Okay.
And so he did all these marvelous things. All of his students were able to do marvelous things. And then they went home, and it was too bizarre, and so they forgot, and you know, it was convenient. That's called giving your power away.
Yeah.
If we are to thrive in the future, Daniel, just like you do with your work here, we have to open our mind and not be afraid to open it and not be afraid to wonder, but long to be a part of it. And when we do that, we don't come back here.
Fascinating. So it sounds like experience over philosophy.
Only philosophy is worth, you know, a peanut shell. But if it's experienced, it becomes gold as wisdom. You can be the greatest philosopher. I mean, you could get up and just blah, blah, blah. You know, like I see these people on television, you know, that when you talked about, you know, lots of people pick up our threads. Oh, gosh, yeah. Daniel, I can't even know where to begin. Like Rampa created the term channeling. You know, now it's a part of our lexicon.
Yes.
You know, now people say you can age backwards. Oh, my goodness. You know, when Rampa and Mai's DNA came out, oh, my goodness, you can change your DNA. You know, there's these philosophers that say all these cool things. They don't have the foggiest idea how to do them.
All right.
You know, at Rampa School, it's called a boot camp because he wants you to learn to see without eyes. So that's the reason why you get blindfolded and go through a labyrinth, because eventually you'll start to see an infrared. And that's the reason why he teaches you that just put a blue web over, you know, where you have a pathology, and this is what you put in your mind. Remember, mind and DNA are inextricably combined. And then, voila, I mean, wonderful things happen. And all of this is to do with the will and choice of every wonderful, amazing person. Most people are not wonderful and amazing. They could be.
Yeah.
But they aren't.
Interesting.
And so I like to share my world with extraordinary beings.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're creating your own reality in that sense.
Well, I created you. And you created me. Now, why? Because you have this lovely show.
Yes. Yes, exactly. I think I follow where you're going.
So why did you want me on your show?
Well, so much of your work is a real enigma. And there's quite a fascinating history.
And you can trace it back.
That's true. And I can see these different waves over time where it's changed and you fine-tune certain things. So there's a rich track record that you and the Rampa School have. For example, you've been giving your interpretation recently to this scientific concept of entanglement. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you to go into that further. And also some compelling things about your personal history. We'll be back with Jay-Z Knight. Stay with us.
Dark Journalist Goes Deep.
My question is, what are you seeing now? What are the conditions like on the ground in real America?
The top guests you want to hear, like investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe.
Audiences are getting it. They are bypassing the government suppression.
Financial expert Catherine Austin Fitz.
So there's a lot going on underneath the ground and a lot going on, you know, in the skies. And whatever it is, it's very expensive.
Scholar Joseph P. Farrell.
If you don't consider the black budget, if you don't consider this hidden system of finance, then you're missing over half of the financial picture.
Historian Richard Dolan.
I hope listeners realize that this is not a run-of-the-mill interview that I do.
Dark Journalist goes deep. The most crucial topics, the breakaway civilization, black budget and covert warfare, hidden information, secret finance, UFOs, the alien reality, the best interviews, the real story. Visit darkjournalist.com. Sign up for our free newsletter to stay updated on the latest shows. Support Dark Journalist by visiting our contribute page. Help us deliver cutting-edge truth to you. Join us on Facebook and Twitter. Dark Journalist. The truth is never easy.
You know, we need dark journalists, so just keep doing what you're doing.
And we are back. This is Dark Journalist, and I'm speaking with Jay-Z Knight, who is the founder and president of the Ramtha School of Enlightenment. Jay-Z is also a best-selling author and gives lectures worldwide on this quantum consciousness teaching she's been channeling for over three decades. Now, Jay-Z, you've been putting out some very interesting research and interpretation on entanglement. Can I have you go into some of that here?
It's a scientific term with not just theory, but with actual scientific experience to back it up. Anyone should, you know, everyone who wants to understand the future should understand at least the rudimentaries of quantum physics. And this idea that, you know, if you pair up two photons and shoot one this way and then the other one this way, and if you block this one, you know, this one will go out too, no matter where it's at. So it's a beautiful term. It's an elegant term of what it means and fundamental, I think, in how we create reality. In other words, the entanglement sort of kind of would fit the concept of what you think you are. Mind as matter rather than over matter.
Okay.
So because those two pair up, right?
Yes.
So your reality is what your personality is. Your personality is just a program, runs in your brain and has what we consider true feelings attached to it. But they're actually old and lousy feelings because none of them are new. We only get new emotions by original experience. And we try to apply them to secondhand shoes. They don't work as good. So reality is what is in the program. It's in the right and left hemisphere of our brain. It works fundamentally in our body. Its great misuse is that we were supposed to have this extraordinary imagination. Well, think for a moment, Daniel, if you can imagine some sort of thing or object or place, and you, if you imagine it, pretty soon you can actually put the architecture, the visuals together in your brain, correct?
Yes.
Why would we have such an amazing ability? What is it, to daydream, to lift us out of boredom? Or is there a utility to that? The utility to imagination, the work of great artists, symphonies, builders, your thoughts, how you think, what is your vision? Imagination was not there to simply have daydreamers. Is actually there is a fundamental to part of our brain to give analysis and possibility to a fundamental creation. That's where, that's our lab. That's where we work, change the color, move this way. Oh, I like her. No, maybe this is the one I want, or this suit looks good. No, I don't think it looks good. This is how we do this sort of analysis. But once we have an idea, that idea is sort of freeze-framed in our frontal lobe. Whatever makes it to our frontal lobe is observed into energy. In other words, the quantum field that you and I are immersed in right now is moving on many levels of reality and many levels of time. We're only seeing it as it phases in and out of our time. We don't see what it's doing in other time. Quantum physics is the tiniest bits of probable matter that there is. It's tinier than atomic physics. So what we call the unification or entanglement is when we finally arrive from our imagination concept. And we focus on this concept. Whatever sits here, Daniel, in our frontal lobe becomes the sort of law or commandment or observation. Rumpke calls it the observer effect within a field. You know, the field is kind of not out here. It's multidimensional. It's like a 12-dimension chess game, for example, and all moves possible. Well, that's sort of like quantum physics and the moves on the board. There's every possible possibility. Once we have this thought in our brain, when we pause on that, Daniel, when we pause time to focus on that, we automatically are now affecting the quantum field. That field begins to adjust and build the probability of that experiment or that experience into real time here. So when we talk about the entanglement, it's actually the entanglement of an accepted modality of construction, thought, that once accepted is entangled immediately in a quantum field of building, of producing that effect in real-time reality.
Uh-huh.
Best demonstrated when Rampa taught foreign students from all over the world who couldn't speak each other's language. And he taught them how great this was beyond time. And he would have them embrace bond. You know, now we have a bonding effect. So these two people, like the two photons, A and B, are going to be able to communicate with one another. And they were able to. We've had to take down from the arena what I lovingly call our wallpaper. We've had so much sending and receiving over the years of correct people who, not even speaking the same language, were able to send and receive thought from one another. So we bonded with it. So that is called the entanglement process. So these people entangle with one another. Our thought, once observed, once properly constructed, Daniel, becomes entangled into quantum reality. In other words, it's the architecture that the tiny bits of matter and possibility and in time produce. That's what it does.
That is very compelling. And I like how you're showing a relationship between these entangled photons and what happens with the students engaging in this process. And it sounds like you extrapolate this out even further.
So let's just say, Daniel, that A is the imaginative construct that becomes frontal lobe. B is the observable effect in quantum physics. And when B manifests, then we have you experiencing your imagination, your ideas. That causes the body to release chemicals that we call emotions. So we get an emotional experience. We become jazzed by what we have just created. That's a new emotion. And that idea and that emotion constructed the reality of the form now viable. Steve Jobs, great example. Any of the quantum physicists that you want to name, I mean, their work is, like I said, they're all dishes to me. But you don't have to be a quantum physicist. They just explain why you could do impossible, marvelous things.
I see. You know, what's so interesting as I'm listening to you speak about this is you've been able to observe this because you've worked so closely with your students over so many years. And, you know, a lot of people can write books about these types of concepts, but certainly doing it the way you do it with that up-close exposure, I'm curious, what are the signs that a student is really getting it, you know, that things are going in the right direction? What are the changes you see when they're on the right track?
Very rarely these days do we have doubters pay that kind of money to come take classes. And the money is is not Lars, respective of other people.
Right.
Once they do that, they come in and, you know, Raptha disarms you. He just says, you know, nothing I'm going to tell you is the truth. And what do you do with that? And, you know, he's always said that.
What do you think of that?
Oh, I think it's marvelous.
All right.
Because we presume too many things to be true that we've never experienced. We think, people out there think we're a cult. Well, what evidence do they have of that? None personally. Just hearsay, you know, and fear drives them to that. And then if they can join in the bandwagon, it empowers sort of thing. So back to the student. First off, the fact that they had to get here or go any place in the world is the first tenement of desire to know. You have to want information that may change your life if you don't stay away. When Raptha says to them, nothing that I tell you is the truth, you know,
it's disarming in a way.
Immensely disarming. But it says, I'm going to teach you because the truth is relative. It's in you. There are truths, like there's highways and airplanes and airports and cities. That's a collective truth. But they're built, they're real things. What I'm about to tell you about you is not the truth until it is your truth.
Uh-huh.
And so he teaches the knowledge, and then he teaches them how to do a discipline with their mind and how to do it properly to gain their first result. And I tell you what, Daniel, there is nothing like the jazziness of that.
I can imagine. What are the kind of examples you're thinking of?
That they could remote view what was going to happen at a certain time 3 days from now. See it, write it down, and witness themselves doing it. Or learning to walk blindfolded in a large field of many potentials and how to give up fear, insecurity, and just, he just says, just hold that focus, you know, right here. Because destiny is going to take you to it, and how people will find a little card about this big out of 2,300 on a field as big as a football field, and they'll just go right to it. There is nothing more wonderful for me personally is to see people discover their magic and discover that they could do these things. And then once they have the truth, see, they can't, so then he makes them do it again. You know, maybe they don't get it the second time because they're trying to repeat the first time.
Mm-hmm.
But he teaches them, you know, how to work with variables. But once they get it, no one can ever take that away from them. It's their truth. They actually were able to see into the future. Was witnessed by a whole audience of people. They were actually able to send thoughts to people around the world. They were able to actually focus on something and miss earthquakes, tsunamis, terrorism, you know, whatever, because their destiny was to a future that was their card. Destiny is made when we have an intent in a future that we must, that we surrender to experience. So as long as we have that intent in the future, nothing's going to happen to us. You know, I mean, a bomb can explode behind you. You're still walking to your destiny. If you have no destiny, if you don't create your day, Daniel, then you're up to fate. You create your day and you learn to do it like a master does it, you know, where it's every word is right here. And it's the future. You don't have to worry about anything because you see, unless you've specified your hurt, your pain, your disengagement, anything that may happen to you during that day will only happen because you see, Daniel, the future is as close as the next 10 minutes. It's as close as this evening. It's as close as in 5 minutes. That's the future. So I could walk down the hall and break my leg. You could have a stroke sitting there. Very much, I just saw a light beside you. But if you live as a past person, you know, you gamble with all that. It's the fates every day. And so you wake up with a mood, and the mood is your emotions. You know, you're trying to get that happiness back by doing the same thing that you've always done to get jazzed. The future is its own jazz machine. When you create your day, you don't know what's going to happen, only that you have created it a certain way, and nothing's going to happen to you until you have it that way. That is quantum physics.
Yeah, I can see that perspective.
So all of these people, they learn to do this.
Yeah.
That's what people learn at the school. And there is nothing more beautiful than to watch people take their power back and finally believe in themselves, because they're quite wonderful.
It's a special thing.
That's why I do the work. That's why I do here. I know what I do there, but it's why I come back to my body here. And, you know, the crazies haven't gotten me yet.
Well, I know they're after you.
Right? Always has been. Not a new story.
Well, you've seen these transformations in people. And I've actually heard interesting stories before about how some students would actually win the lottery and stuff. So, I mean, it's kind of surprising, right? Because they're working with a metaphysical principle.
No, they're working with mind. It's not metaphysical. It's mind. They're working with their mind.
Okay.
Their mind in a future. Everything that they're pulling right now is present past, but they're going to hit it.
It's a very interesting idea.
It's that thought, Daniel, matters. Future is where matter presents itself through the architecture of thought. So they're focusing on a specific number, and they create their day, and they work and work until they get to accept that. Once you totally accept it, you can do anything. And that's what they do. So we have hundreds of thousands of students around the world, many that have done this work, but were afraid to apply it. They got talked out of it by their family, their church, their community. They were weird, you know. And so they use their own will to give it up. Other students, all 89,000 of them or 90, whatever it is, you know, they're using the work everywhere. And that is the way it should be. Shouldn't we be the center of our own reality?
Yes.
Isn't that what you teach? Isn't that what you like?
Yeah. Oh, I agree with the ideal 100%. It's actually a very fascinating approach. And one of the things you've pointed out about how people cling to the past and recycle the emotions of the past.
They do.
Yeah. And it seems like the entertainment industry and the political structure, they encourage that also.
Absolutely. And you have to belong. Our need to belong is that we must agree with the tenets in which they control. It's the old feudal system.
Now, why are they addicted? You know, the people who do this, and a great many people do it. Why are they addicted to going back into the past to recycle these feelings and emotions?
It's not that some people do it. Everybody does it.
Okay.
We're not really an island. We're a planet. Because no one has, or if they have, they've been brilliant another. And it doesn't take a lot to be a genius. It doesn't take a lot to be brilliant. Just become your own person and develop your own truth and your own thoughts. And if you understand the fundamentals of, well, why do we have an emotional body? Well, some would say, you know, well, that's being human. Of course it is. But have you ever logically wondered why? So that this body made from the earth, you know, breathing oxygen instead of some other atmosphere, looking like this instead of looking like other, is that we're really, it all comes down to a pyramid, the top of the pyramid, make known the unknown and the power of yourself to do so. And we take up these bodies in reincarnation. We're now making robots, you know, we're so efficient at making babies. but we want higher intelligence. We could have higher intelligence if we only understood what we are. We're not our body. We are we are living inside of R2-D2.
Uh-huh.
And we are picking up all of whatever. When we make something that is acceptable to the future, that is acceptable to consciousness as a whole, how do we know we've made it? Our body has to experience, has to touch it, smell it, feel it, you know, good or bad, hear it, see it, wear it. Because that's the sort of capstone of entanglement, is the experience of what we created. Well, how do we know that we created it? We have to experience it, because modeling on improvement and adaptation comes from making better a former thing. Adaptation from what we just experienced. Well, when we experience those are all emotions. So all of that tactile flow of eyes and hearing and feeling and touching and sexuality and suffering, pain, good or bad, or power, victimization. All of these go through our experience. And we usually have developed the lion's share of our emotions by the time we're about 22 years old. After that, we have discerned what's good for us and what's bad for us. So we stop making known the unknown. We become a follower, a groupie. We become stupid. We live off of love, you know, not off of mind. And so we remember our first love because there's never been anything like it. Because our current love is not innocent. You know, first thing is innocent. So what we do then is then emotions dictate how we feel. So this is good, this is bad. So we start recycling emotions that we refuse to retire as to wisdom, because we only can adapt if we have wisdom to do so. So we never create adaptation with the emotional body. It rules us. It's what we say when I look at you and I go, oh, baby, we are meant to be together, you know, that sort of thing. That's because I can
feel. Can you do that again?
Yeah. you know, oh, I know, you know, or I feel this is good, or I like him, or I like the way she looks, or I love this food. You know, all of that is really based upon what we used to know. So we're recreating the past in a time flow in the brain by leading our lives through emotion, Daniel.
Instead
of making known the unknown, which gives us the future, what is then the criteria of our DNA to sustain us as a viable biological being into a future if we're still living in the past? There is no new data coming in. There is no reason for DNA to adapt, to change, to model. It begins to age. You start aging after 21 years of age. Actually, some people sooner than that. And it's a slow decline of metabolic time over the next 50 years. And so we don't get younger. We get older. We don't become smarter. We get tired.
Right.
We become unhappy because we're diseased. And why is that? Because we have lived a gift of life.
Huh. So we need to find that renewal. That is so interesting.
Don't you think so?
Wow, that's a lot there. One thing that intrigues me is that when you look at what's happening now with modern technology and how it's being used, you know, we see these faces everywhere buried in these little smartphones. And you've talked about this neuronet and how it's going to be difficult for us to create the future if we're sucked into this kind of technology. So what are the real dangers of the technology and these energy grids that they're building around us now?
Where do you want me to start? there is great redemption in our technology that we can bring our friends and family just like you and I are doing today, Daniel. We don't have to travel for a year to be together to have this interview.
Right.
But what this does in a stupid society is that it keeps us locked into people, places, things, times, and events. We forget how to communicate true intellectual information in 139 words or in a text, that you know, there is no elaborate wordsmithing to. So what we get is we get dumbed down that, in fact, the instruments, the technology itself, is the smart and enslaving thing. People don't know what to do without their cell phone. They check it all the time. So they forget to live.
Yeah.
You know, they're chatting. They're being relevant. Relevance is really important to people. I have known many famous people, and they are feared. Their greatest fear is to become non-relevant.
Oh, yeah.
But that is also the same sort of fear for people, too.
Sure.
Just normal people. They want to be relevant. So it's important how many people are following you on Facebook. It's important how many people are picking up your tweets. And if somebody, if some news organization picked up your tweet, by golly, you're relevant today. I mean, that's a jazzy thing. That sort of is this an entrapment, right?
No question.
I mean, will you ever be as smart as your iPhone?
Oh, boy.
Really?
That's an excellent question.
If we cannot answer that, then I think should we be worried becomes a very important question, or statement, or worry. We're not as smart as our computer. If we are not as smart as our iPhone, if we can be relevant without it, try putting it away for a week.
Hmm.
See how you feel. Your emotions will feel lost and irrelevant. So you'll pick it back up and touch base with all of these people using unsophisticated diction and, you know, a very lousy vocabulary. And then you start to connect again. Then you feel good. You feel included. You're part of the herd. But what if, you know, the sun sends us a blast, takes out all of our networks? How smart are you then?
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Really? Really? How smart are you then? So the people that know how to do sending and receiving and remote viewing are already up on this game.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's an important question to look at.
Are you as smart as your iPhone? Are you as smart as your computer? When you create your day, it's just, you know, a bit of wise advice. Always say, this day, I have always been a genius. Now, the reason we say always, Daniel, is because the potential is already there in the quantum field. It's already there in your brain. It's certainly there in your DNA. Brilliant. And in order to be a genius, you just have to be future mind. Just to say that, and say it slowly, I've always been a genius this day. Because always means it's always there. You're now calling it out. And then you will find your marvel. You become a very present human being that can see and make alterations with your astute imagination, all sorts of improvements, because the future allows adaptation and expansion. The past doesn't allow it. The past doesn't allow you to change its laws. Because if you change how you emotionally feel, then you're not relevant. So the enslavement of the past is sort of fixed on who we were. Who we are, who we will be, is not. It's adaptable, it's plastic, it's flexible, and we get to be who we want to be. In other words, we get to move to a new neighborhood in our brain.
That is fascinating. You know, I want to ask you, even though I know you don't like putting the spotlight just on yourself personally, when speaking of reincarnation and past lives, have you had previous lives as a wisdom teacher?
I think I've been burned a lot for knowing what I know.
Uh-huh.
I've only had, as far as I remember, one, you know, reward life. That's where you're pretty and, you know, and you're intelligent and, you know, but still without women's liberty, freedom to be an individual. But I think I've been burned and drugged and scorched and behaved myself. But I think I have always had a loose boundary in reality. And in fact, my thin boundaries came out in the Stanford tests and a few other tests. You can't leave your body like I do if you have thick boundaries. You can't change if you have thick boundaries. If you're set in your mind, you can't change. I have very loose boundaries, very thin boundaries. So I think I've always, to a degree, in other experiences, had thin boundaries. This is why I could see things that perhaps other people couldn't. And sometimes foretelling was a dangerous business. If you called people out on some sort of nefarious act of truth, you know, you're liable to have your head chopped off and burned. I was burned at Carcassonne. I was burned in France. I was burned in Mesopotamia. I've been burned a lot.
Wow.
So, yes.
Well, they sound like heavy experiences. Now, having this powerful impact on people as you do, it's an incredible life and destiny. Is it ever a burden because we can demand so much from a teacher?
I've learned to become circumspect of, I mean, I guess I'm a teacher. I just, I live my extraordinary life in a normal, extraordinary way. I learned a long time ago, you know, I used to sort of preach to people about, you know, you shouldn't do that. You know, you should be creating this. You should be doing that and blah, 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 blah. Why do you care what these people think? And, you know, it was really, you know, sort of evangelistic. And I learned that people were quietly turning me off. And it was a good experience because I realized that not everything that people ask for, they really want to know.
Right.
But it's good conversation. It's good banter. And so over the years, I've become very circumspect by engaging in conversation with people that I can look at them and I can tell if they're going to do anything with what I have to say. Because otherwise, I have a lot of requests for interviews and I chose you. You chose me. Must be a good thing.
I'm very glad that you did, by the way.
I'm very glad you did as well. I mean, there are 1,000 people I could have for Thanksgiving dinner, you know? But most of those people want me to make them happy. You know, I learned this about the men in my life, you know? They wanted me to make them happy.
Right.
You know? And when I kind of got that, I realized that, you know, and I'm keen enough to understand that, you know, I'm not here to make anybody happy. I don't want to be someone's entertainment.
Yeah.
So I began to become very circumspect in choosing who I spend time with. I love great conversation. Like I could sit down and, you know, speak to all those quantum physicists and just love just throwing ideas at them and calling them on it and then having them call it on me. And, you know, the last thing I want to hear is, oh, you know, I mean, I had this, you know, it's my past, you know, da 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 da. I don't want to expend at 70 the rest of my years entertaining people. I don't want to answer questions from insincere inquiry. I want to know that that what I say and that my life matters, and that the question matters from the people, and that they will take that and use its utility in some wonderful way to mitigate changes in their life. I could do all day long, Daniel. I mean, all day long. I'm profoundly unimpressed with people who are impressed with themselves.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because you look at them and you see how stupid they are, and yet they are people who influence people. That's very frightening to somebody like me.
Yes, it makes a lot of sense, actually. You know, it's amazing. You've had this extraordinary influence on people, your students, the millions who've read your books. I know that when I meet someone who's looking beyond the mainstream for deeper answers, that I'll find your State of Mind book on their bookshelf, and it's usually a powerful inspiration for them. So when we look at that and think back to your early years, and you were, of course, born in Roswell, New Mexico, which I always found interesting.
I was born in 1946, and the UFO that dropped me off crashed the following year.
That's what it was. I mean, it is rather remarkable. We have to admit that. So when you look back at all the things that you went through and the appearance of Ramtha in 77 and all that followed with creating the school, how does that feel as a destiny? You know, it seems you had to make all the right moves at different points in your life to make it all come together and be so successful. And I should say here that a number of alternative movements rose and fell, and many just disappeared completely. But what you've put out there has really thrived.
Because it's the real thing.
All right.
I mean, you know, I always have the will to work with Ramtha. It's not a possession. It's not an enslavement. I mean, it really is him teaching me acceptance. And not just because he said so, but because I have experienced it. And I have the emotions of that experience. And so then I have the wisdom, and so then I can adapt. I mean, there's so many times that my family wanted me to quit channeling. I mean, I remember one time one of my children said, "Can't you just be a secretary?"
Oh, boy.
I could never deny the Ram because I see him. Other people have seen him because I see him. I've had my brain tested. I've had my psyche tested. I have, you know, from one way to, you know, from Dallas to Redwood, California. I mean, I've had it tested every which way you can imagine. No, I'm not a psychopath. I'm not, you know, what, some kind of something or other. I really have seen this being from day one.
And from the book, it's clear you had a lot of deep questions right off the bat.
Well, Ramtha started answering. Whoa, I mean, that's, but answering, you know, I hear it a lot from him. Well, you know, that's not for you to know. Well, I mean, why can't I know? Well, you have to experience it. Well, how can I do that? You know, through banter. And you can't deny when people want you to. I mean, I can't even tell you, the media here said, you know, if you'll just confess, we all will forgive you. And I looked at him and I said, you know, if I lived and denied my marvelous experience so that you would be happy for me, if I lived my life for you, would you die for me when it comes my time to die because I've done so well living for you? Everybody thinks it's a silly question, but I thought it's most logical. Could never deny Ramtha. And many of the things that I like, you know, we live in Yelp, you know, he's the one that sent the runner here. That I ended up having a horse ranch that had to build this excessive arena because the smaller one he blew down. The very day that I saw this run-down old pile of heap here on Yelp Highway, I lived in a very nice neighborhood in Gravelly Lake, Tacoma, you know, with Dennis' wife, right?
All right.
I think that's one of the seminal moments where I was on the razor's edge. I didn't want to buy this piece of trash out here. I mean, it was just ungodly looking. And I, you know, you think Ramtha's going to send you a runner. Oh, it's going to be in the Himalayas. It'll be on, you know, some mountain top or da, 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 da.
Yeah.
When in reality, he sent me to this dump. And I came this close in not buying it.
Wow.
And I think today, in retrospect, what would have happened on that razor's edge had I followed my vanity? Oh, this doesn't look like what I think it should look like. Rather than Ramtha saying, do it. And if I hadn't bought this place, there would be no school. There would be no children born today. There would not be this community here. There would not be what the bleep do you know? There would not be all of the books. There wouldn't be anything. And it all came down to a singular decision on buying a really run-down place on a highway.
Huh.
Because I didn't think that it met, in my mind, you know, some Himalayan, I don't know what I thought. But almost didn't buy it. And he always gave me choices, always has. And I have found that when I've gone against them, you know, it was my own choice. I couldn't blame anybody. You know, you learn not to be a victim and use it. How can that choice best serve me? And so I was best served by making a better choice, Daniel. And I learned to adapt with that. So then I had to spend all the money to build this place up from nothing.
Right.
And I couldn't get loans, you know. I'm now the cult leader in Washington State. You know, whoever bought such a banana was down in Oregon somewhere, whatever he was doing. nothing could be further from the truth. And so we were immediately the outcast of Poker Flats. But I had to do it because I could see him. I knew it was the truth. I'd been out of my body. I knew. Then I had to deal with my personality. I had to deal with my program, my vanity. And I have been loved and persecuted. I have been adored and burnt to shreds. I have been loved by the greatest people in the world. And when it went bad for me, they never knew me.
Amazing.
Oh, I have. But had I not made any of those decisions, I would not have lived to be 70.
Yes.
And I wouldn't see all these UFOs. I wouldn't know these other beings from other places. I wouldn't have an intelligence that, you know, gives me the reason to be circumspect of some people. And so I think that, you know, to be as bizarre as me, to be great. And I know every human being, all 7 billion of us, not one has been cheated of that, of the faculty to be that. Everyone is an observer. It's just how can governments and corporations and belief systems, you know, corral everyone and get them to think this way and despise that, you know?
Right.
I think that the age of enlightenment comes partly because of social media. When people begin to see themselves as relevant, you know, remember a while ago, we were talking about relevancy.
Oh, yeah.
When everyone feels they're relevant, even if it's through their iPhone, their computer, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever else they're on, once they think they're relevant, the idea of that communion takes over. And now we have a challenge. Look at all the great laws that have happened with, you know, accepting same-sex marriages, accepting people of, I mean, really, it's just about sex. But so who cares? Why does religion or government have to be in anyone's bedroom? I think it's appalling.
Yeah.
Look what we've done with women's rights. Look what we have done with Black Lives Matter. Look what the revolutions are doing around the world. This, I think, is the purposeful good that the future brings us in this. But again, I have to ask the question, could you have been this way without your iPhone, without your computer? If they go dark, are you still relevant?
Huh. And that is going to be the powerful question that lingers for someone watching this, along with so many others that you've raised here today, JZ. And you know, your life is an inspiration for so many people around the world. It's also an enigma, of course. How do you see it?
My life has been a good one. And you know it's good if it's sustainable. And yes, a lot of people have risen and fallen. When it's the truth, it just is.
Well, your work and your experience are extraordinary, and you've had an amazing impact on how we view some of these mysteries. So thank you for sharing some of that with us today. And what a pleasure it is to have you on the show, Jay-Z.
You're a lovely man. I wish you all the best in your marvelous undertakings, and especially your program Take Off after this interview.
Thank you. Well, I know I got a great deal from listening to you today, and I'm sure so many others will also. So thank you for sharing your wisdom with us.
Hello, everyone. Don't forget your wonderful Merry Christmas, Merry Holidays to you too. Thank you, Daniel. Bye-bye.
Okay, have a great day.
Bye-bye. Don't forget to create your day.
Okay, I'll give it a shot.
If you create your day, your future now, darling.
I believe you.
Bye, Daniel.
Thank you for joining me for this powerful episode on quantum consciousness, UFOs, Ramtha, and creating the future with Jay-Z Knight, the founder of the Ramtha School of Enlightenment. You can find more special reports, interviews, and documentaries at www.darkjournalist.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel for the latest videos. See you soon.